There are three central values in life: the experiential, or that which happens to us, the creative, or that which we bring into existence, and the attitudinal, or our response in difficult circumstances. The highest of these is attitudinal. In other words, what matters most is how we respond to what we experience in life.
The single most powerful investment we can ever make in life is investment in ourselves, in the only instrument we have with which to deal with life and to contribute. We are the instruments of our own performance, and to be effective, we need to recognize the importance of taking time regularly to sharpen the saw.
If we want to change a situation, we first have to change ourselves. And to change ourselves effectively, we first have to change our perceptions.
We must look at the lens through which we see the world, as well as at the world we see, and understand that the lens itself shapes how we interpret the world.
Achieving unity, oneness with ourselves, with our loved ones, with our friends and working associates, is the highest and best and most delicious fruit of the seven habits. Most of us have tasted this fruit of true unity from time to time in the past, as we have also tasted the bitter, lonely fruit of disunity, and we know how precious and fragile unity is.
Creating the unity necessary to run an effective business, or a family, or a marriage, requires great personal strength and courage. No amount of technical administrative skill in laboring for the masses can make up for the lack of nobility of personal character in developing relationships. It is at a very essential one-on-one level that we live the primary laws of love and life.
Ecology is a word that basically describes the synergism in nature. Everything is related to everything else. It's in the relationship that creative powers are maximized, just as the real power in these seven habits is in their relationship to each other, not just in the individual habits themselves.
Synergy is everywhere in nature. If you plant two plants close together, the roots commingle and improve the quality of the soil so that both plants will grow better than if they were separated. If you put two pieces of wood together, they will hold much more than the total of the weight held by each separately. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. 1 + 1 = 3, or more.
You can be synergistic within yourself even in the midst of a very adversarial environment. You don't have to take insults personally. You can sidestep negative energy. You can look for the good in others and utilize that good, as different as it may be, to improve your point of view and to enlarge your perspective.
Win-win is a frame of mind and heart that constantly seeks mutual benefit in all human interactions. Win-win means that agreements or solutions are mutually beneficial, mutually satisfying. With a win-win solution, all parties feel good about the decision and feel committed to the action plan. Win-win sees life as a cooperative, not a competitive arena.
Many people think if you're nice, you're not tough. But win-win is nice and tough. It's twice as tough as win-lose. To go for win-win, you not only have to be nice, you have to be courageous. You not only have to be empathic, you have to be confident. You not only have to be considerate and sensitive, you have to be brave. To do that, to achieve that balance between courage and consideration, is the essence of real maturity and is fundamental to win-win.
Anything less than win-win in an interdependent reality is a poor second best that will have impact in the long-term relationship. The cost of that impact needs to be carefully considered. If you can't reach a true win-win, you're very often better off to go for no deal.
No deal basically means that if we can't find a solution that would benefit us both, We agree to disagree agreeably. No deal. No expectations have been created. No performance contracts established. I don't hire you, or we don't take on a particular assignment together, because it's obvious that our values or our goals are going in opposite directions. It is so much better to realize this up front instead of downstream, when expectations have been created and both parties have been disillusioned. When you have no deal as an option in your mind, you feel liberated because you have no need to manipulate people, to push your own agenda, to drive for what you want. You can be open. You can really try to understand the deeper issues underlying the positions.
Certainly there is a place for win-lose thinking in truly competitive and low-trust situations. But most of life is not a competition. We don't have to live each day competing with our spouse, our children, our co-workers, our neighbors, and our friends. Who's winning in your marriage is a ridiculous question. If both people aren't winning, both are losing.
Developing a win-win performance agreement is the central activity of management. Employees can manage themselves within the framework of that agreement, and the manager then can serve like a pace car in a race. He can get things going and then get out of the way. His job from then on is to remove the oil spills.
Most people are deeply scripted in what I call the scarcity mentality. They see life as having only so much, as though there were only one pie out there. And if someone were to get a big piece of the pie, it would mean less for everybody else. The scarcity mentality is the zero-sum paradigm of life. That's why a character trait that is essential to win-win is the abundance mentality, the paradigm that there is plenty out there for everybody.
Public victory does not mean victory over other people. It means success in effective interaction that brings mutually beneficial results to everyone involved. Public victory means working together, communicating together, making things happen together that even the same people couldn't make happen by working independently. Public victory is an outgrowth of the abundance mentality paradigm.
Private victories precede public victories. You can't invert that process any more than you can harvest a crop before you plant it.
The key to the 99 is the one, particularly the one that is testing the patience and the good humor of the many. It is the love and the discipline of the one student, the one child, that communicates love for the others. It's how you treat the one that reveals how you regard the 99, because everyone is ultimately a one.
Maturity is the balance between courage and consideration. If a person can express his feelings and convictions with courage, balanced with consideration for the feelings and convictions of another person, he is mature, particularly if the issue is very important to both parties.
Here are two ways to put ourselves in control of our lives immediately. We can make a promise and keep it, or we can set a goal and work to achieve it. As we make and keep commitments, even small commitments, we begin to establish an inner integrity that gives us the awareness of self-control and the courage and strength to accept more of the responsibility for our own lives. By making and keeping promises to ourselves and others, little by little, our honor becomes greater than our moods.
As you work to develop a paradigm that empowers you to see through the lens of importance rather than urgency, you will increase your ability to organize and execute every week of your life around your deepest priorities, to walk your talk. You will not be dependent on any other person or thing for the effective management of your life.
Taking a few minutes each morning to review your schedule can put you in touch with the value-based decisions you made as you organized the week, as well as unanticipated factors that may have come up. As you overview the day, you can see that your roles and goals provide a natural prioritization that grows out of your innate sense of balance. It is a softer, more right brain prioritization that ultimately comes out of your sense of personal mission.
An effective goal focuses primarily on results rather than activity. It identifies where you want to be, and in the process, helps you determine where you are. It gives you important information on how to get there, and it tells you when you have arrived. It unifies your efforts and energy. It gives meaning and purpose to all you do.
If two people have the same opinion, one is unnecessary. It's not going to do me any good at all to communicate with someone else who sees the same thing. I don't want to talk to communicate with someone who agrees with me. I want to communicate with you because you see it differently. I value that difference. So when I become aware of the difference in our perceptions, I say, "Good, you see it differently. Help me see what you see."
People are very tender, very sensitive inside. I don't believe age or experience makes much difference. Inside, even within the most toughened and callous exteriors, are the tender feelings and emotions of the heart. That's why in relationships, the little things are the big things.
You simply can't think efficiency with people. You think effectiveness with people and efficiency with things. I've tried to be efficient with a disagreeing or disagreeable person, and it simply doesn't work. I've tried to give 10 minutes of quality time to a child or an employee to solve a problem, only to discover such efficiency creates new problems and seldom resolves the deepest concern.
The cause of almost all relationship difficulties is rooted in conflicting or ambiguous expectations around roles and goals. Whether we are dealing with the question of who does what at work, how to communicate with your daughter when you tell her to clean her room, or who feeds the fish and takes out the garbage, we can be certain that unclear expectations will lead to misunderstanding, disappointment, and withdrawals of trust.
If I were to summarize in one sentence the single most important principle I have learned in the field of interpersonal relations, it would be this: seek first to understand, then to be understood. This principle is the key to effective interpersonal communication.
As you learn to listen deeply to other people, you will discover tremendous differences in perception. You will also begin to appreciate the impact that these differences can have as people try to work together in interdependent situations.
In empathic listening, you listen with your eyes and with your heart. You listen for feelings, for meaning. You listen for behavior. You use your right brain as well as your left. You sense, you intuit, you feel. Empathic listening is powerful because it gives you accurate data to work with.
Spend time with your children now, one-on-one. Listen to them. Understand them. Look at your home, at school life, at the challenges and the problems they're facing through their eyes. Build the emotional bank account. Give them psychological air.
If you want to interact effectively with me, to influence me, your spouse, your child, your neighbor, your boss, your coworker, your friend, you first need to understand me. And you can't do that with technique alone. If I sense you're using some technique, I sense duplicity, manipulation. I wonder why you're doing it, what your motives are, and I don't feel safe enough to open myself up to you.
Empathic listening gets inside another person's frame of reference. You look out through it. You see the world the way they see the world. You understand their paradigm. You understand how they feel. Empathy is not sympathy. Sympathy is a form of agreement, a form of judgment. And it is sometimes the more appropriate emotion and response, but people often feed on sympathy. It makes them dependent. The essence of empathic listening is not that you agree with someone. It's that you fully, deeply understand that person, emotionally as well as intellectually.
Empathic listening takes time, but it doesn't take anywhere near as much time as it takes to back up and correct misunderstandings when you're already miles down the road, to redo, to live with unexpressed and unsolved problems, to deal with the results of not giving people psychological air.
Go out with your spouse on a regular basis. Have dinner or do something together you both enjoy. Listen to each other. Seek to understand. See life through each other's eyes.
The more deeply you understand other people, the more you will appreciate them, the more reverent you will feel about them. To touch the soul of another human being is to walk on holy ground.